Penguin Random House Audio presents 9 Nasty Words, English in the Gutter, Then, Now, and Forever. This is the author, John McWhorter. For Vanessa Hamilton McWhorter, who I get the feeling is going to have a witty feel for at least some of these words as we travel on. Introduction. Babe Ruth's parents had a rocky marriage. Mr. Ruth ran a bar. Apparently, the bartender and Mrs. Ruth had eyes for each other and did something about it. Mr. Ruth knew it and got a lawyer to have the bartender sign an affidavit. The document survives and reads,
I, the undersigned, fucked Mrs. G.O.H. Ruth, March 12, 1906, on her dinging room floor, which she asked me to do.
That piece of paper is what many of us would find the most interesting thing concerning Babe Ruth until he broke baseball's home run record in 1920, despite that he was neither the miscreant nor the cuckold involved. Why? A friend of mine's mother had a certain fondness for blue language, and as her children became teenagers, began cursing rather freely in their presence. One Christmas day, when everything seemed to be going wrong and she was complaining about it, her daughter said, Mom, I thought on Christmas everybody was supposed to be jolly. The mother shot back, Oh, jolly shit. My friend was still laughing at that years later when it cracked me up too, and I cherished the memory of that episode 40 years after it happened, despite that I wasn't even there. Why? And you're probably waiting for me to get to George Carlin's famous routine about the 7 words you can never say on television. It would be downright antisocial not to list them now. Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. The question is, though, why that routine is so well remembered almost 50 years later, while some of us would be hard-pressed to remember anything else Carlin said or anything that comedian David Brenner, also a phenom at the time, ever said at all. And if you draw a blank on Brenner completely, case in point. The Babe Ruth tale entices because we're intrigued to see people in a post-Victorian era, when public mores were so much starchier, using a word we even today think of as distinctly dirty. Perhaps nothing could make long-gone people seem realer to us than evidence that they use words like fuck. Profanity channels our essence. Oh, jolly shit is funny first in that a woman, a mother no less, was saying something with such a smutty feel in front of her kids, but also in that it shows how our urge to curse often bypasses our fundamental instinct to make sense. What did oh, jolly shit mean? And if the answer is nothing, then why do we say such things? What the fuck is that? Is subject to similar questions. What part of speech exactly is fuck in that sentence? Profanity channels our essence without always making sense. And Carlin's routine still resonates in pointing out the wholly arbitrary power of curse words. Carlin coolly rattled them off in a way that no comedian could have on a commercially released album 10 years before, and the sky did not fall in. But even in recent years, then-Vice President Joe Biden made national news by not saying, but whispering, this is a big fucking deal to President Barack Obama after the passage of the Affordable Care Act. And as quaint as tits may now seem on Carlin's list, characters on television still use it much less than their real-life equivalents. Boobs is one thing. We're not surprised to hear it on Modern Family, despite the fact that no one would have said it on All in the Family. But tits, the words used for purposes of lusty appraisal, we still tread lightly. Profanity channels our essence, even when eluding logic, even more mysterious in leaving us quaking at the utterance of what are, in the end, just words. But clearly these aren't just words like names of fruits or animals at the zoo. In terms of how we produce them in our brains, curses are indeed different from boy, run, already, and nevertheless. In most people, language is generated on the left side of the brain, which is associated with logic, motor functions, the Apollonian realm of things. That's the side that lights up in a PET scan when we speak ordinary words and sentences. However, when we haul off with a curse word, it's parts of the right side that light up, specifically the areas associated with emotion, and calibrating its cathartic expression. The limbic system, as these parts are called, looks like a graceful coil, often for some reason colored lavender in illustrations, which has always led me to associate it with Princess Leia. The left hemisphere can be entirely removed, which yields two interesting results. The first is being alive. Such people can survive. The second is that they can no longer speak in terms of ordinary words and sentences, but can still cuss like sailors. Likewise, a person without a right brain can talk up a storm, but finds themselves stymied when they try to swear. This means that when you yell shit or fuck, you're not simply uttering a word. Curses erupt from the more emotional, impulsive parts of our brains, more squawks than labels. A word is presented, a curse pops out. Where we have the space to carefully assemble and burnish our sentences, something like already or grocery store comes out. Meanwhile, we spit out fuck when it's time to run away from a lion. This is part of why curses can be so utterly disconnected from their technical meanings. In yelling shit when we realize we forgot our phone, we're not likening anything to poop. Fuck, we say when stubbing our toe, certainly not meaning sexual congress. Curses are clad in the guise of words, like those little chocolate liquor bottles. To approach these with thoughts of Godiva and Russell Stover is missing their point, which is what's sloshing around inside of them. The point, then, the essence, is the peaked sense of offense and how we cope with that blow via the visceral and immediate gesture of swatting back. You level your revenge by saying something you've been told that you should not. Herein lies profanity's punch. As Carlin deftly got it across, these words have no power. We give them this power by refusing to be free and easy with them. We give them great power over us. They really, in themselves, have no power. Curses are words that have long ago ceased being themselves, having been vested with the power of transgression. They may have emerged as ordinary words, but, over time, they made their way from our left brains to our right. In the Middle Ages, in England, Bristol's maps showed a glade called Fucking Grove, while up in Chester, one could proudly sport a name like Roger Fuck by the Navel. Only once fuck crossed that cognitive boundary a few centuries later did it become a word so dirty that generations of lexicographers pretended that it didn't exist. And just as a word can attain profane status, it can lose it. Going back to Carlin's list, I'm pretty sure I have never in my lifetime, which began in 1965, heard anyone called a cocksucker, and have certainly never leveled the term. In the 1960s and 1970s, trailblazing Representative Bella Abzug was reportedly fond of it in honest moments as a general term for persons of whom she disapproved. But it seems to have migrated into archaism since then. These days, you're much more likely to hear asshole, which settled in as an equivalent term in the late 1960s. What's key is that the stock of curses is ever self-refreshing. The fashions change, as always and everywhere, but what persists is taboo itself, a universal of human societies. What's considered taboo itself differs from one epoch to another, but the sheer fact of taboo does not. Language can't help but reflect something so fundamental to our social consciousness, and thus there will always be words and expressions that are shot out of the right brain rather than gift-wrapped by the left one. This is why they have the peculiar status that George Carlin commented upon, and why, while the potency of much of his list has weakened considerably, new ones have arisen that occupy the same place in the culture. Maybe your Aunt Frances walked out of the room rather than listen to Carlin's disquisition when her nephew Craig was playing it on his record player around when Nixon was reelected. But then, how many of us would be up for watching a comedian today on Netflix gabbing about how we need to get over our delicate treatment of nigger and faggot? In fact, Carlin's case that these words really in themselves have no power is academic. Words like these wield modern America's strongest taboo, the slander of groups. Both words stopped being themselves long ago. Profanity will always intrigue us with its distinctive status and flavor amid the real words that make up our language. They're both not real words and realer than most others. What chose them to give vent to our ids? How have our curse words transformed along with our taboos? And what can these words teach us?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?